And welcome on in, as it is Ryan Hickey in for Bill right here on Rider Than You. A very happy Tuesday morning. Thank you for making us a part of your day right here on the Infinity Sports Network. Very excited for today's show. We have a lot to talk about. The Browns yesterday released their quarterback depth chart going into preseason game number one. I'll tell you what it means for Shedeur Sanders. Optimism, I think, for Shedeur as his NFL future gets underway this week as the preseason does start for everybody else outside of the Hall of Fame game we saw last week. Jaden Daniels does speak on the absence of Terry McLaurin. You'll hear that. We'll react to that. Since college football now is just a few weeks away, don't look now. Week zero, August 23rd. That's like 2.5 weeks away. We're rapidly approaching college football. I'll give you the top five college football storylines we all will be paying attention to this season. Eric Edholm of NFL Media will join us here in about an hour or so to talk about the Browns depth chart, talk about Travis Hunter and his expectations this year in terms of not only how well he'll play, but where he'll play, offense or defense, and how much. Eric will join us here in about an hour or so. Does a great job for NFL Media. Of course, we have by ourselves, Nico Scarlatos back with us producing as myself, Ryan Hickey, in for Bill right here on Rider Than You. I want to start today's show by talking about the Denver Broncos, because I thought this was really interesting. Their head coach, Sean Payton, recently just did an interview, a really well-done interview by Charles Robinson of Yahoo Sports, and he gave this quote that I think could be jarring to some, flat out shocking to some. He said, and I'm going to read it to you here, quote, "The short-term goal about the team this season is winning the division, but this is a team capable of winning the Super Bowl. I've coached six teams that I thought could win the Super Bowl. Some went to championship games, some to the playoffs. This is my seventh team that I think has that," end quote. Huge words from Sean Payton. How often do you hear a coach say, "I think I have a Super Bowl caliber team this year"? Not many coaches say that. Good for Sean Payton. And you may think he's crazy. I think he's right. I think the Broncos are the most underrated team going into 2025, and I think they absolutely should be in the same conversation as teams like the Bills, teams like the Ravens, of teams trying to knock off the Chiefs here in 2025. I think they're on that level. I think they're on the caliber. And they're not getting, I think, enough shine as we get set for the season to kick off here in just about a month. And this is a team that went 10-7 last year in Bo Nix's first year at quarterback. They have a top three scoring defense in the league last year, and a lot of those guys come back this year. You add to that great defense you have by adding two guys who played a lot of football, Dre Greenlaw and Talanoa Hufanga, both coming over from a 49ers defense that when they were there was one of the best in the league year in, year out. They've been to a Super Bowl. They've been in a lot of playoff games. They know what it takes. Offensively, this offseason, you added Evan Engram, who is a guy that when he's healthy is a dynamic pass-catching tight end. They have all this talent, yet nobody's talking about them. But everyone in the NFL is obsessed with Jaden Daniels and the Washington Commanders. For how much love that team gets, the Broncos should be getting the same amount. Equal love. Because I think when you look at the two teams, the Commanders and the Broncos, I think Denver is a better overall team than Washington. When you look at what they have, Sean Payton, I think, is one of the most consistent winners in all of the NFL at head coach. And I thought proved last year the league hasn't passed him by. A lot of questions. When he retired, that end of the Saints tenure did not go great. Then he comes back. Obviously, the Russell Wilson experiment was a dud, even though I think he got the most out of Russ that is possibly left. I think that's more on Russ right now and the state of his career than it is Sean Payton as a coach. But then you see last year what he did with Bo Nix. Who not many people were talking about Bo Nix last year, right? It was Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels, and here's some love for J.J. McCarthy, and oh man, we love Michael Penix Jr. Let's go up and get him. Bo Nix is the most unheralded quarterback of that draft class last year that got a lot of attention and a lot of praise. And outside of Jaden Daniels last year, there's no rookie quarterback better. And for how good Nix was last year as he gets set for year number two, again, nowhere near the love and respect and attention that Jaden Daniels has gotten. Like you look at last year, what Nix did, just to remind you in case you forgot or maybe didn't realize. Last year, Bo Nix threw for 3,775 passing yards. That was 12th most in the NFL. To put that into context, Nix last year as a rookie, in guiding the Broncos to the playoffs, had more passing yards than Josh Allen did last year, than the whiz kid that the next big thing Jaden Daniels did last year, than Matthew Stafford did last year. Nix had 29 passing touchdowns, more than Allen, more than Patrick Mahomes, more than Daniels. Now, he did throw 12 interceptions. That's a number that's not great, but you got to think going into year number two, as things start to slow down for Nix, he has a great feel and concept of the offense. His decision-making will improve. His accuracy will get better. And that turnover number will go down. And part of the reason why I think I'm so bullish on Bo Nix going into year two and why I'm not believing, I mean, there will be a sophomore slump, but maybe not to the drop-off like we saw from C.J. Stroud amongst other quarterbacks. One of the reasons why is because Nix is a perfect fit for this offense. That is something that's not talked about enough in terms of how rookie quarterbacks can succeed and come in and have a lot of success. Fit does matter. Who you play with, what the offense is. Are you in an offense where they're trying to fit it around you, or are you in an offense trying to fit around what they have? More times than not, a lot of quarterbacks are drafted to a team that they try to fit in to the, what the offensive coach coaches. Nix is a perfect, basically to me, he's Drew Brees 2.0. Same skill set, more athletic, I would say, but in terms of passing, in terms of reading the field, West Coast, get the ball out fast, that's where Nix is at his best, and that's where Drew Brees and Sean Payton had their most success. So he is a perfect fit for the Sean Payton offense. He even spent time with Brees this offseason, so that should help his development going to year number two, and he has some good weapons around him. You have a 1,000-yard receiver in Cortland Sutton who is a reliable guy, reliable target, big body. You have an offensive line, this is really important, that is ranked, according to Pro Football Network, as the best offensive line in 2025. A big reason why Denver's O-line is very heralded going into this year is because all five starters from last year are back this year. That continuity is rare. You see from year to year, there's always a lot of turnover. Now the Broncos have the same starting five 2 years in a row. That's huge for that unit. That's huge as well for Bo Nix. He's comfortable. You're not learning new bodies. Communication now can pick up where it left off from last year instead of starting all over and trying to teach a new guy new tricks. So that offense has weapons. They have the best protection you could have and ask for in the NFL up front. And you have a defense, again, like we just said before, that was one of the best in the league, where you have a reigning defensive player of the year in Patrick Surtain on the outside. I love the Jahdae Barron selection as well to beef up your secondary. You're a good team that stops the run. You're physical. You had a good experience in the offseason. You look at this team and what they have. They are a great defense. They are solid playmakers. They have a really promising quarterback, and they have a great head coach. Yeah, when you talk about the Broncos, or when you talk about, I should say, let's put it this way, when you talk about teams that could take down the Chiefs, you never hear Denver names being mentioned. It's Buffalo. It's Baltimore. Can the Bengals get their defense figured out? What about the Texans? What do they do for a bounce back this year? How about the Chargers? People want to look at every other team except the one that's just standing out there in plain sight. To me, the Denver Broncos are the most underrated team in all the NFL this season, and I think they are capable and should be in the conversation of teams that can legitimately knock off the Chiefs here in 2025. It's the Bills, it's the Ravens, and for me, it's the Broncos. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4ISN. It is Ryan Hickey with you right here on the Infinity Sports Network. The question I want to ask you to start today's show is this. I think for me, my money, the most underrated team in the league going into this season is the Denver Broncos. Which team do you believe going into the season is not getting the love they deserve? Who is a team that you've identified that could surprise a lot of people? It doesn't have to be playoffs or Super Bowl, but if you think the Tennessee Titans, let's say for example, can be an 8-win team, going from first pick in the draft now to get Cam Ward to now all of a sudden they're, you know, floating a 500, it's not a team I think many people have high expectations for. If you have a team like that, 888-710-4ISN. That's 888-710-4476. Also, you can tweet me, Ryan_Hickey3. It's one thing for me to say, and I just read you the quotes before that Sean Payton told Yahoo Sports just a few days ago about his belief as to the Denver Broncos being, in his mind, in his words, the seventh team he's ever coached where he believes preseason they are good enough to win a Super Bowl. Yesterday in his press conference, Sean Payton was asked by the media to kind of dig into that more. Here's Sean's explanation as to why he's so bullish on this year's team.
Well, obviously, it has to start with quarterback. It has to start with defense. It has to start with offensive line. Like, there's certain things that if they're not on point, it's hard to make a statement like that. And then I would say, most importantly, ownership. Because there's 20 that each year have hope and dreams, and they're dysfunctional at the top.
A lot of that, right, we just talked about quarterback, defense, et cetera. We talked just a lot about that the last few minutes here. But he brings up a good point that and is one that is not talked about enough. Teams are talented. Ownership gets in the way and derails what could be a promising season. I think of a team like the Cincinnati Bengals, who absolutely should be, and I would argue maybe should be the team to knock off the Chiefs in the AFC. We've already seen them do it once, right, in Arrowhead. The only time since 2019 the Chiefs had not made the Super Bowl was because they lost to the Bengals in the AFC title game. They're the only team in the AFC that's done it right now, outside of the Patriots or Tom Brady. That should be a team that we're talking about every year as the biggest threat to the Chiefs. Yet, when I just talked to you before about teams that can knock off the Chiefs, right, you mentioned the Bills, haven't done it yet. Gotten close, but haven't done it. Ravens, come close, haven't done it. Broncos really haven't had a chance yet to come close and compete. They haven't done it yet. We've yet to now to talk about the Bengals. Why? Because I think of what Sean Payton just said. Ownership. That's a really talented offense. Really talented offense. But because Mike Brown is cheap, and because he waited to pay guys like Jamar Chase, had to overpay, waited to pay guys like T. Higgins, had to overpay, waited to pay guys like Trey Hendrickson, right now is holding it. I think a deal will get done, but it will be more expensive than they could have gotten him at if they just paid him last year or earlier this year. And that money adds up. We talked about it yesterday with Jerry Jones and why I would categorize him as one of the worst owners in NFL history when it's all said and done, because all the distractions he creates takes away from winning. But one thing Jerry has done that has hurt the team directly is, even though he pays his guys, he takes a while, antagonizes them publicly, but eventually gets the deal done. But because he waits, he overpaid Dak Prescott, had to make him the highest paid quarterback in NFL history. He waited and paid CeeDee Lamb more than he could have if he got, you know, out on top of that contract earlier. He's now going to overpay Micah Parsons and make him the highest paid defensive player in NFL history, when he could have got him for $7 million roughly cheaper if he just paid him back in March. And so when you're looking at it, you add all that up, you know, extra $10 million here for Dak, an extra $5 million here for CeeDee, an extra $7 million here for Micah that he's paying extra, that if he just got out ahead of it, he could have saved. We're talking roughly about $20 million per year that Jerry could have available in cap space if he got out ahead of some of the contracts he knew he was going to pay guys for, but just waited and dragged his feet and ended up, because other guys got paid, ended up having to pay more. Same thing here with Mike Brown. He waited, and now all of a sudden that money that he could have gotten Jamar Chase, I'd say about $35 million a year, now is at $40. He could have got T. Higgins for cheaper than the $28.5 million he's paying him per year. Trey Hendrickson wanted a deal last year, could have got out ahead of it. He goes, leads the league in sacks, and now all of a sudden he's looking for a big payday, and you have to make him a richer offer than you could have if you got it done back in March or April. And that's, so again, that's more money that takes up the salary cap, that makes it more difficult to, especially on the defensive side of the ball, get guys that can make plays, tackle somebody. That defense is the biggest reason why we're not talking about the Bengals right now as a Super Bowl contender. That offense is the best in the league. Defense can't stop anyone. As you saw last year, a great offense and a bad defense equals you miss on the playoffs. So Sean Payton is right. Bad ownership can derail good teams. The Broncos have really good ownership. They check a lot of boxes. And I just don't think, when you look at right now, a lot of the talk surrounding the NFL, and as we start to look ahead to who can make a Super Bowl run, who could be that surprise team, who could be a team that no one's talking about that, you know, makes a lot of noise, it's the Denver Broncos. I think they are a legitimate Super Bowl contender here in 2025. They, to me, are the most underrated team in the league. 888-710-4ISN. 888-710-4ISN. Which team in the NFL right now is not getting the love you think they deserve? 888-710-4ISN. That's 888-710-4476. That is the number to call to have your voice heard. You can also tweet me and have your thoughts right on the show at Ryan_Hickey3. We will get your thoughts as it is Ryan Hickey in for Bill right here on Rider Than You. And also when we return, Jaden Daniels speaks on the absence of Terry McLaurin and will discuss why, if you're the Commanders, every day Terry's not at training camp and a deal is not signed, it becomes a bigger concern. We'll get that to you when we do return. It's Ryan Hickey in for Bill right here on Rider Than You.
You're listening to the Rider Than You podcast. Welcome back to Rider Than You.
The more likely that there's a problem, the more likely you are it's on lockdown. I don't want Jordan yelling at me again.
It's not even Bill that they're afraid of. It's Jordan.
No, they're not afraid of Bill at all. He's a softie.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
I cannot wait. August 1st, Labor Day Monday, UNC taking on TCU, the debut of Bill Belichick, the college football head coach. Speaking of college football, 20 minutes from now, I'll tell you the five biggest storylines everyone will be paying attention to this season in college football. Here's a hint. Bill Belichick could find himself in the list, possibly. It'll be a very fun storyline for sure. We'll dive more into that about 20 minutes or so from now. How about this? Some news out of Bengals camp. Zach Taylor's met with the media earlier this morning, and he said that big-name players like Joe Burrow and others will play a few series in their preseason opener this Thursday against the Eagles. That has been contrary to how the Bengals have operated in the past, where no one has played in the preseason at all. And there's a thought that the lack of preseason reps has contributed to the Bengals' consistent slow starts in September. And so Ja'Marr Chase has talked about it before. Maybe playing in the preseason will help get this team off to a quicker start. And so now, preseason game number one, expect to see Joe Burrow. Appears no longer than a quarter, so a series, maybe two. But Joe Burrow, there's no other star name, but it goes, at least according to Jeremy Rausch of Fox 19 out in Cincinnati. Other big-name stars will play, so I assume that means Ja'Marr Chase. I think you could see T. Higgins out there as well. So some big-name stars for the Bengals will play in their preseason opener this Thursday against the Eagles, something to get excited for as Cincinnati tries desperately to get off to a fast start for the first time in the Joe Burrow era. One guy you will not see out there, hot take, ready? Trey Hendrickson. Because as of this very moment, Trey Hendrickson is still holding in, looking for a new deal, has yet to practice. He will not be out there in a preseason game number one. Speaking of holdouts, another player you will not see in preseason week number one is Commanders receiver Terry McLaurin. Because he as well, Esther Hendrickson, is holding in at practice, but not practicing, so he doesn't get fined. And he's looking for a new deal, roughly about $30 million or so per year. I thought this was really interesting. I want to play this for you and then react to it. Jaden Daniels yesterday sat down with CBS Sports and reacted right now to Terry McLaurin's contract situation as he continues to feud with the Washington Commanders.
Control what I can control. I know one day 17 will be running out here, and hopefully soon, but I can't control what he has going on with his business or, you know, the front office, stuff like that. I got to go out there and try to be the best version of myself each and every day, and just hope one day all gets resolved, and 17 is back out here catching passes.
And I thought it was really interesting when Jaden right there said, hopefully soon. And that to me brings me to this point, because at this point, for the Commanders, where they are and what they're expected to do this season, there's no excuse anymore, none, as to why Terry McLaurin's not been signed already. Because think about this, it's not even about Terry at this point. It's about your quarterback. It's about your franchise. For how great Jaden Daniels was, and he was great in 2024, he's far from established. Remember, he's still just going into year number two. He's still a young quarterback that's trying to learn. And so not having his number one receiver on the field for training camp, it's a problem. He's not Mahomes. He's not Josh Allen. He's not Aaron Rodgers in the sense of he has all this chemistry built up with his receivers. He has all this chemistry built up with his teammates to where if his receiver, in this case Terry McLaurin, misses 3 weeks of training camp and then comes in later on, It's not just plug and play. This is a guy who's only made 20 career starts, even though they were 20 great starts. And the best rookie year I can remember a guy having. He's still young. He still needs these training camp reps. Throwing to Terry McLaurin in July and August still matters for him compared to a lot of other quarterbacks that are going into year 7, 8, or 9. And that's why I think when you hear Jaden talk about wanting Terry back on the field ASAP, the longer this drags out, I think the more it hurts the Commanders. And remember, the expectation this year is Super Bowl. Last year, you go to the NFC title game. It's now Super Bowl. And I think the longer this feud goes on, the longer Terry is not practicing, the more difficult it becomes for the Commanders this season to win a Super Bowl. Those reps matter. Training camp does matter. Not having him out there, you can't tell me, makes the Commanders a better team. There's going to be no impact. Then if Terry McLaurin shows up on September 1st, then all of a sudden, you know, in 10 days, he's going to just be right on the same page with Jaden Daniels. They're going to go into week number one, you know, like they missed nothing. No. He's still young. He's still learning. These reps matter, especially in a year where defenses are going to throw more at Jaden Daniels than he's ever seen before. I would argue this could be the hardest year of Jaden Daniels' career. Sophomore slumps are real. Now all the tape is out on Jaden. So there's going to be adjustments. There's going to be schemes that he has never seen before. And he's still trying to work his way into feeling comfortable and trying to learn, you know, basically how to get out ahead of that. Guys like Mahomes have been able to do it. Josh Allen, Aaron Rodgers, et cetera. A lot of the greats, right? One of their biggest strengths is knowing how to adjust to the adjustments. Jaden, at this point in his career, doesn't know what he doesn't know. I would argue this year number two, with all the success he had in year number one, this will be the hardest year of his career. And now as we get to, you know, starting to near the third mark of training camp, you know, a third of the way through, to not have his best receiver on the field is a problem. And also, it's not like Terry McLaurin hasn't put up the production that warrants a new deal. This is a guy who's had 5 straight 1,000-yard seasons, who in his 6 years in the NFL, his lowest output with the Commanders is 919 yards. The guy's consistent. He's healthy, has not missed a game since 2020. Not only has he caught passes from mostly bad quarterbacks, Taylor Heineke, Alex Smith, late Dwayne Haskins, Kyle Allen. He's had some bad QBs throwing the ball. It's not just that. Ryan Fitzpatrick, Carson Wentz. It's also the fact that McLaurin has not really had any sort of threat on the outside that takes attention away from him. Right? With how great Ja'Marr Chase is, having T. Higgins is beneficial to Chase. Because now if you're a defense, you have to think about two guys. If you're going against the Eagles offense, you have to think about A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. If your team and a defense going against the Commanders, outside of Terry McLaurin, who are you worried about? Even Deebo Samuel. Are you that worried about Deebo Samuel? But even before, let's just put him to a side for a second. Up until this point in his career, Terry McLaurin's never had a receiver next to him put up at least 700 yards. He's always been the number one focus for every defense, for every week, yet so far through 6 years, all the guy has done is produce. I don't care that he's turning 30. That's a guy you pay. And the longer the Commanders drag their feet, the more it impacts and hurts their chances to win a Super Bowl here in 2025. Get the deal done ASAP. 888-710-4ISN. It is Ryan Hickey in for Bill Ryder right here on Ryder Than You. So this is really interesting. Yesterday, the Browns released their official depth chart for a preseason game number one. And it read like this. Joe Flacco is QB1, followed by Kenny Pickett, followed by Dylan Gabriel, followed finally by Shedeur Sanders. Now look, you can look at that and say, oh boy, Shedeur's screwed. He's going to get cut. Here's the thing that matters, because this is going to change as we go. Again, we have 3 preseason games. Joe Flacco's not going to play a lot in the preseason. Kenny Pickett's not going to play a lot in the preseason. It's going to be a lot of Dylan Gabriel, a lot of Shedeur Sanders. Both will have opportunities to play themselves on the roster. I think no matter what happens in the preseason, the 2 quarterbacks that absolutely need to be on the roster for the Browns come week 1 through the rest of the season is Shedeur Sanders and Dylan Gabriel. I think 2025 would be an absolute waste for the Browns if any quarterback not named Shador and not named Dylan play and start for them here in 2025. Because when you look at the Browns, their expectations for this season, it's a rebuilding year, right? They're still trying to get over the Deshaun Watson contract. They don't have a quarterback situated to figure it out. But at least for Cleveland, the only thing you could salvage from this year is possibly finding out if either Dylan Gabriel or Shador Sanders could be your guy. The only way you find out is by playing. Like, Joe Flacco's there to mentor. He's 40 years old. Do we need to see Joe Flacco start 13 games? What is that going to tell you for the future of the Browns? Nothing. Kenny Pickett, I think his career, he stinks. Kenny Pickett stinks. Him starting 13 games is doing nothing for you if you're the Browns. You watch 13 games of Shador. You watch 13 games of Dylan Gabriel. You'll know pretty quickly, can this guy play or can he not? And you can get an answer one way or another. And the answer, by the way, either way is good. If neither can play, okay, fine. That means you probably stink. And that means you'll have a high draft pick next year in the draft to get a guy that seemingly is in a loaded quarterback class here in 2026. And if either guy shows you something, maybe all of a sudden we look at Shador and go, oh, wow, you know what? This guy actually can be maybe a franchise guy. Let's see what he can do in year number two. You have your pick. And also don't forget the Jaguars' 2026 first round pick to put talent around him. You have ammo here in the draft to either move up with two first round picks next year to move up to get the guy you want. Or if Dylan Gabriel shows you something, if Shador can show you something, you have two first round picks to get some premier talent to put around them to make them even better going forward. So this is a lost year for the Browns. They're not chasing the playoffs. But at least if you can figure out what you have in the two quarterbacks you just drafted, that could make 2025 a win. Seeing 13 games of Joe Flacco, seeing 13 games of Kenny Pickett gets you nowhere in the future. It is a big-time L. Play Dylan Gabriel, play Shador Sanders, and see what the hell you have. Either it goes well, and okay, we got something, or it goes poorly, and you are picking top five, and maybe if the Jaguars also flame out, you have, you know, their pick at number 9 or 10. You have now two top 10 picks to use to get talent or to use to trade up and get your guy. Either way, for me, it's a win. Seeing Joe Flacco, seeing Kenny Pickett, those scenarios are big-time losses. Yesterday, head coach Kevin Stefanski was on ESPN Cleveland, and he was asked about a timetable for when he wants to name QB1 for the Browns here in 2025. Take a listen to the Browns head coach and what he said.
We're not there yet. I'm really pleased with the group. I'm pleased with how everybody's progressing. It's going to come sooner than later, but I don't have an exact day in mind. I'm pleased with the group. I'm pleased with the progress. What I've said all along is I'm going to let this play out. I'm not going to jump to any conclusions. I'm not going to rush a decision or anything like that. I'm going to do what I think is best for the football team. When that comes, it'll be sooner than later.
Sooner than later to me means it's going to be either Joe Flacco or Kenny Pickett. The longer this quarterback competition goes out, the more opportunity for Gabriel or Shador to win the job. The quicker this is decided, and the quicker that means you're going to see a veteran play. Because at least by, you know, you look at the reps that they're getting in practice, Shador is really not getting barely any first-team reps. Dylan Gabriel's getting some, but they're mostly still going to Flacco and Pickett when he's healthy. You can't name Shador Sanders your starting quarterback for week number one if the guys, you know, had five first-team reps in practice. You need to give him a leash. We're going to get a chance to see what he has here in the first preseason game this week. Hopefully he could play a good amount. I mean, obviously, you know, seeing the Tyler Huntley signing yesterday is more about a body in camp because, ironically enough, everyone but Joe Flacco's hurt. Dylan Gabriel's a tight hamstring. Shador Sanders' shoulder, try to say that five times fast, is sore. Kenny Pickett's dealing with a lower leg injury. So Tyler Huntley is just there to be a body. He's going to play in week number one for the preseason just to get some reps out there. But the quicker this decision is made by Kevin Stefanski, I think the quicker that means you're going to see a veteran play. And again, if Joe Flacco starts two games and then it's the Shador Sanders / Dylan Gabriel show the rest of the year, okay, fine. But if you're excited to see and hopeful to see one of these two rookie quarterbacks start week number one, then you better be rooting for a long quarterback battle that goes well into August. The quicker this quarterback is named for the Browns, I think the more likely that means a veteran will be playing week number one for Cleveland. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4ISN. It's Ryan Hickey in for Bill right here on Writer Than You. When we return, college football 2.5 weeks away to week zero. We are inching our way closer. When we return, I want to give you the five biggest storylines to pay attention to in college football this season.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
I have a theory of human beings that everyone's a total weirdo. And with most people, you can't figure out how. With you, we've gotten there pretty quickly.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
It is Ryan Hickey in for Bill right here on Writer Than You. Do you want to know what spawned, in case you forgot, didn't listen to it live, that comment from Bill that I'm a weird guy? It's because I'm anti-condiment. That's what he called me weird for. For not being a ketchup guy, for not being a mustard guy, for not being a mayo guy, whatever it may be. I'm a big believer if food is good enough, it does not need condiments. So I don't put ketchup on a burger. I do like a cheeseburger, so I mean, I don't think cheese counts as a condiment, but like, I love it. Just give me a dry cheeseburger, that's it. Bun, burger, patty, cheese, bun. I'm in heaven. That's all I need. Fries, don't need ketchup. Don't need anything to dip it in. Come on. But I guess that's a weird take, and I'm a weird person. And that makes me weird, so be it. I'll stand in my truth. As it is, Ryan Hickey right here in for Bill on Writer Than You. Before we get to the five biggest storylines in college football in 2025, I saw this. This is being offered by Ohio State. I think this is insane, and this is so cool. So for $500, you could become a first half kickoff tee runner for the Texas game, meaning, right, like on a kickoff, you could be the guy who runs out there after the ball is kicked and retrieves the kicking tee from the field and runs back to the sideline. For $500, I would pay that in a heartbeat. That's insane. Could you imagine being down on field level, especially for the opening kickoff of the biggest game of week number one, one of the biggest games of the season? It is the first ever number one versus number two matchup in week number one, even though it's a noon game. Thanks, Fox. That atmosphere in Columbus is going to be electric. Imagine being on the field down low for that. It'd be so cool. Now, the problem is that, unfortunately, this is reserved for only kids 12 and under. You can't be an adult. You can't be a middle-aged man after a few brewskis in the parking lot, lining up on the sideline, ready to sprint like you're back in high school, having your Rudy moments to get the kicking team and be able to witness that atmosphere. I think that would make it so much better. Nico, could you imagine the opening kick happens, and let's just say Texas is the one receiving the ball, and you got a 45-year-old guy who's pretty bombed out of his mind, stumbling around. He picks up the tees, running back. He stumbles and falls, and now all of a sudden, Texas breaks a tackle. They're trying to take him back to the house, and now you not only have to avoid the kicker, but also the fat guy who's drunk laying down on the field. This would make it 10 times better, more entertaining.
It'd be like a repeat of Cal Stanford. The band is right on the field.
The drunk fan is on the field. Why are we eliminating? That's going to be great for kids. And I'm all for opportunities for kids. I'm not trying to take away a great moment for an 8-year-old that he'll never forget. But, I mean, you talk about just a golden opportunity to give the fans what they're looking for. We make it to where anyone can do it. That's the easiest, I think, $500 I would ever spend. Are you interested? Would you do this?
It's a cool idea. Like, I get the idea of being able to run on the field while the play is actually happening, too, is insane to think about. Not worth $500 for me, though.
Really?
I'd rather have amazing seats and be able to watch the game.
But you could do that at any point. Like, this is in fear, right? The only time you are never getting on the field again. This is the only opportunity you'll ever have.
I also think because of how important of a game it is, like, if I was an Ohio State or a Texas fan, I know I'd be so locked into the game. Like, if this was Ohio State versus Nevada, let's just say, and you know that Ohio State's going to win by 50 anyway, yeah, you wouldn't mind, you know, running out on the field and then missing a little bit of the game. Because, like, we talked about it off the air beforehand, we're assuming that you don't get to stay on the field, on the sidelines, to watch the whole game. So now you got to pick up this tee, you run back. Now, by the time you get back up to your seats, you just missed the whole first drive of the game. And if Ohio State's on defense and you're an Ohio State fan, that's going to be electric. If there's ever a third down situation, the crowd's getting into it. I don't want to miss that as a fan.
I would be A-okay with missing the first drive of the game if it means running on the field to pick up the tee for the opening kickoff. That is a sacrifice I will gladly make anytime. That's all right, your loss. Now, unfortunately, it's all of our losses because, again, neither of us are under the age of 12. So we will not be doing that. But keep your eye out for anyone, any young kid. Maybe they'll take a spill, and all of a sudden that's part of the kick return here, is avoiding the kid on the field as well. But a very cool offer from Ohio State, and for only $500. That could be, I guess, your child if you would like. Or if you, I guess, you're under the age of 12. Listening right now, that could be you as well. Could be you as well. Speaking of college football, week zero. Few weeks away. A lot of storylines to pay attention to. I'll give you the five biggest ones I'm paying attention to in 2025.
Number five.
Fifth biggest storyline, I think it's going to be the Heisman Trophy race. You look already in the preseason, the pool of guys that could win the trophy this year, I think is legitimately deep. I've counted, I'm going to give you seven guys already that have real cases to win this award this season. Cade Klubnik, I think for me, is the best quarterback in college football coming back in 2025. Last year for Clemson, 36 touchdowns, just 6 interceptions, 3 top receivers for him back here in 2025. So a lot of continuity coming off of a strong year for him. I think he's going to be even better in 2025. I'm very bullish on Clemson. Very, very bullish on what the Tigers can do. For me, I think the guy at the end of the year that's going to win it is Cade. I think he's going to have a huge year. But other guys nipping at his heels, of course, are Arch Manning, right? Most hype prospect I can remember to start a year in my 31 years on this earth. You look at Garrett Nussmeier out in LSU. Last year was top 10 in the country in terms of passing yards and QBR. He's back, also has a lot of talent around him. LSU did a good job improving the wide receiver room this season. Drew Aller, Penn State, is quarterbacking the best team in college football. How many times do we see the quarterback of the best team in college football win the Heisman? Well, that will be Drew Aller this year. Lenore Sellers of South Carolina, very, very dynamic. Really got consistent passing the ball last year. Should be even better this year. John Mateer, I am so excited for John Mateer at Oklahoma. A guy who led it up last year at Washington State. 44 total touchdowns, nearly 4,000 yards of total offense. He now goes to Oklahoma. I think he makes them a college football playoff contender. He's got some good talent around him here as well. Six guys I just gave you, I think, have real chances to make the playoff, real cases to win the Heisman. It's a quarterback award, right, for the most part. 20 QBs since 2000 have won the award. The last, though, two non-QBs to win it. Travis Hunter last year, wide receiver and DB. Devontae Smith back in 2020, receiver for Alabama. Both receivers. Don't sleep on Jeremiah Smith of Ohio State. The guy is a freak, had over 1,300 yards of receiving offense last year and 15 touchdowns. He's going to get the ball early and often. The Heisman race is going to be won. That's going to be very exciting.
Number four.
The Big Ten versus SEC battle. The Big Ten's won the last two national titles. SEC looking to claw back the title of best conference in college football. That's going to be, I think, a fun back and forth all year long. I think we will see the Big Ten win a third straight national title. Who? I'll tell you that a little bit later on, but that's the fourth biggest storyline we'll see in college football, the Big Ten versus SEC battle.
Number three.
Third biggest storyline in college football this year. Can James Franklin finally win the big game? This has been a team that's always been the bridesmaid, never the bride. 1-10 versus Ohio State. 4-20 under Franklin versus top 10 opponents. They're the best team in the country. This throws the year, I think, Penn State will finally break through. They will be the third straight Big Ten team to win the national title. I think Franklin's change in coaching big games will be the difference here. Even though he lost to Oregon, even though he lost to Notre Dame in the last two big games Penn State's been in, he's been coaching more aggressively, which has been a stark difference for basically every other big game James Franklin's coached at Penn State. That aggressiveness will carry over. Penn State will finally win some big games and win the national title here in 2025. Franklin finally puts the narrative that he can't win a big game to bed.
Number two.
Second biggest storyline, it's obviously going to be Bill Belichick and Deion Sanders and how they do. I'm so excited to see how Bill Belichick does in North Carolina. I'm looking at that schedule. They should be a bowl team. They should get to 6 wins, right, which I think would be a win for Bill Belichick. And you look at Deion Sanders, I think he's still going to be a big-time story, even though he's not new like Bill is, because of no Travis Hunter, because of no Shedeur Sanders. I think there's going to be real question and eyes on him of, is he truly a good coach, or was he just the benefactor of a really good quarterback in Shedeur and the best player in college football for 2 years in Travis Hunter? Those are two coaches that are going to get a lot of attention and take up a lot of the storylines here in 2025.
Number one.
Biggest storyline in college football is, of course, Arch Manning. Can he live up to the hype? Now, I don't think he will in 2025. I don't think he's winning the Heisman. I don't think Texas, as I just told you, is winning the national title. I don't even think Arch will be the best quarterback in the SEC this year. I think it's going to be John Mateer. I think because Arch Manning is going to be at Texas for 2 years. It's not confirmed, but that's my belief. He's going to be there for this year and next year. Steve Sarkisian is going to take it slow as head coach. They're not going to just throw him to the Wolves in week number one and have him air it out 45 times against Ohio State. Because here's something to remember. Arch Red is a first-time quarterback. There's also seven new starters on Texas's offense. They lost four to their five offensive line starters, lost their three leading receivers from last year, including their tight ends. There's a lot of new outside of Arch for Texas this year. I think it's going to lead to a slow process to build them up, and then they really cut them loose in 2026. So I think Arch will be good, but in terms of the hype that's being built up around him, he's not going to live up to it here in 2025. So the five biggest storylines in college football that I'm paying attention to this year: number five is the Heisman Trophy race. Number four is the Big Ten versus the SEC battle. Number three is the question of whether James Franklin can actually win the big game. Number two, how Bill Belichick and Deion Sanders will do. And number one, can Arch Manning live up to the hype? Very excited for that. It's Ryan Hickey in for Bill right here on Rider Than You. When we return, Eric Edholm of NFL Media will join us here on the show. Speaking of Travis Hunter, will he be in the NFL a better defensive back or wide receiver? Eric will tell us next.
You're listening to the Rider Than You podcast.
And welcome on in. It is Ryan Hickey in for Bill right here on Rider Than You. A very happy Tuesday morning. Thank you for making us a part of your day right here on the Infinity Sports Network. We've talked a lot of NFL so far this morning, and let's now talk to an expert. A man does a great job covering the NFL and the NFL draft for NFL Media. It is Eric Edholm. Eric, good morning, man. How are you?
Doing well. What's going on, man?
Not much, Eric. Not much. Just enjoying a lot of these updates about, you know, from training camp. Now we're starting to see some depth charts being made when it comes to preseason games. So very excited. We're starting to get some real football here, inching everybody closer and closer to that. Speaking of depth charts, I want to kind of get your thoughts here first. So you do a great job covering the NFL draft. So you've seen, obviously, Travis Hunter up close and personal at, you know, covering him in Colorado, now getting ready for his NFL debut. He was listed yesterday by the Jaguars on their depth chart as a starting receiver and second-string defensive back. I'm curious in your perspective, when it's all said and done, do you think Travis Hunter in the NFL will be a better receiver or a better defensive back?
Yeah, I think right now, at least his rookie year, it feels like the majority of his work is going to be done on the offensive side of the ball. I don't know if it's 60-40, 70-30, 80-20, whatever, but it feels like that's the most likely scenario. You know, they want to give someone to Trevor Lawrence alongside Brian Thomas Jr., I think is a running mate, a big play threat. Liam Cohen is obviously an offensive guy. You can understand how they'd want to exploit his talent. I thought that was a big statement made at Hunter's pro day when he went out there and caught passes and didn't do defensive back work. Now, there were people who thought he could be, you know, that starting corner in the NFL coming out of the draft, you know, that this was not only the best receiver prospect in the draft, but also the best corner prospect. So, you know, there may be a time when that ratio gets closer to 50-50 or something. I wouldn't be shocked, but right now you can maybe use him in 2 minute situations on defense, red zone, you know, the fourth corner, if you will, when they go, if other teams go four wide, you know, you can pick your spots, like some teams do with an offensive threat, using them on punt returns or kickoffs or something like that. So I could see it like that to start, and then we'll see after that.
Eric Edholm is our guest. Does a great job covering the NFL and NFL draft for NFL Media. Follow Eric on Twitter at Eric_Edholm. So, Eric, I thought it was interesting. Obviously, you know, we're still kind of wrapped up in the Micah Parsons trade request from now on Friday. And I enjoyed your article because it's like, basically, number one, we have to do this. We have to do trade destinations. I don't think he's going to get traded, but anyway, let's dive in to have some fun. I thought it was interesting that one of the first teams you had on the list there was the Buffalo Bills. Would you say Brandon being their GM has done enough so far to put this team in position to win a Super Bowl this year?
Yeah, I mean, they've been close. So obviously, it's not like you could say, you know, there's first round exits every year. I mean, obviously, some of the same issues, you know, depth in the secondary, pass rush, things like that. You know, obviously, the receiver situation for a while was a little bit thorny too. You know, it was Josh having to make plays by himself, and they've been able to kind of address those things. And I suspect a lot of the second, third, fourth year players on their roster who have, you know, either regressed or haven't quite broken out yet are going to help. I mean, Keon Coleman has been up and down, but I think he could end up being a big piece for them. Cole Bishop at safety. You know, Greg Rousseau is a good young pass rusher, but, you know, everyone wants those veteran moves, those big moves. Joey Bosa doesn't quite qualify at this stage of his career, but he could help. You know, they got those two defensive linemen who are both serving six-game suspensions. Hey, look, if they can survive the early part of the year, maybe they have a little more freshness up front. They were just so thin on the defensive line by the end of last year. Now, look, a Parsons deal would obviously be pie in the sky. Like, they have so many obstacles to keep something like that from happening, right? Dallas has to want to trade him.
Right.
That, you know, they've got to be able to pay him. They've got to come up with the draft picks and assets to get him. It's probably the triple jump, right? There's no way he's actually going to be able to get all three legs of that. But I think they're close. I think they have a chance. I think, obviously, you know, Kansas City, Baltimore, the usual suspects are going to be right there. And, you know, it's, we'll have to see if that defensive depth and they have enough playmakers when it comes to the end of the season.
We're talking NFL Media's Eric Edholm. You're right about the Bills in terms of not only being close, but also if, let's just say, they wanted to make this trade, how difficult it would be. Let's just say, Eric, we're living in a fantasy world where Jerry Jones woke up this morning and said, you know what? I do want to trade Micah Parsons.
Yeah.
Is any team even in position at this point so close to week one to make a deal?
I think you'd probably eliminate about half the teams. I don't think Jerry wants to trade him to an NFC team and have to face him more frequently. Certainly not to the Commanders, right? Everyone says, oh, well, you know, he wants to go play for Dan Quinn. I'm sure he does, but, but, you know, you got to get Jerry to play ball. So I would imagine they would sit there and look at all the AFC teams who have, you know, the cap space available, who have the extra draft picks. Obviously, you know, you look at the Rams swinging that big trade with the Jaguars. You know, could you convince yourself to trade him to LA and face him every couple of years? I don't know, but that's probably where it would start. It's like, who can offer me the most, and how do I move him to a place where we're not constantly reminded of his presence? I mean, that's probably the biggest thing. It would undercut so much of what they've done there, if that were to happen, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Jerry, I mean, it feels like it's going to end with a deal. I guess he is unpredictable at this point, so who truly knows? But yeah, anything but Micah Parsons becoming the highest paid defensive player in NFL history, I'd be very, very surprised about. As you are talking to Eric Edholm of NFL Media, this got some attention yesterday, Eric, as the Browns put out their depth chart for their preseason game number one, and it read Joe Flacco 1, Kenny Pickett 2, Dylan Gabriel 3, Shador Sanders 4. Obviously, it's interesting when they take two rookie quarterbacks two rounds apart from each other in rounds 3 and 5, the Browns did. When you see Shador Sanders 4, and obviously it gets a lot of attention, a lot of headlines, is there any way you think he's in jeopardy of getting cut before week number one?
If they're not planning to keep four quarterbacks, and if Pickett is still somebody they believe in as a backup, then yeah, there is. And that's the thing. I mean, you know, the rule of thumb, it's, you know, different for every team, but like, you're a day three pick, fourth rounders tend to make the roster more often than not. Fifth rounders, it's probably a below 50-50 shot at that point, fifth, sixth, seventh, and undrafted guys. You know, the farther down the chain you are, the less chance you have. Now, obviously, Sanders is kind of in a different category, right? This is a player with a lot of name value and was one of the most, you know, closely watched players as his fall continued during the draft. And, you know, we all know his story and everything, but, you know, I would imagine they'd at least try to trade him, you know, to some team that you know, obviously, like, you know, you have two different types of teams. One that's looking for developmental type, they might be interested. Then you have a team that if they suffer an injury, maybe they're looking more for a Kirk Cousins type to step right in and be that guy or whatever. But, you know, it's hard to sort of see that one spot somewhere else where he would make the most sense. And, you know, injuries are a factor here. Pickett's a little banged up. Shadur's a little banged up. Gabriel's had a little minor things mm-hmm. here. They had to sign, you know, Snoop Huntley the other day. So five quarterbacks, six if you count Deshaun Watson, who obviously isn't healthy. But, man, what a room. What a fascinating situation that is.
You are not kidding. I mean, look, it makes for intrigue, right? We'll be following the Browns quarterback battle all preseason long. Oh, yep. Boy, Cleveland, that's very interesting. Yeah, the landing spot, too, be very fascinating. You're right, because, I mean, obviously every team had chances, basically four or five chances to draft him. And
that's
said
right.
No, thank
and
you.
And most passed, yeah.
Right.
Yep.
And so now who's going to want to give up anything to draft him? It's going to be very, very interesting. That's one that's going to be, obviously, we'll be paying a lot of attention to as the preseason does unfold. We're talking to Eric Edholm of NFL Media. Check out Eric on Twitter. Does a great job covering the league at Eric_Edholm. One quarterback trying to make a name for himself, or at least trying to establish himself, I guess is a better way to phrase it here, Eric, is Caleb Williams. And really all we've seen, at least on social media, now we haven't seen any preseason games yet. It's all social media clips, and it's easy to get carried away. But a lot of the social media clips you've seen from training camp so far have not been great from Caleb Williams. Interceptions, sacks, whatever it may be. What are your expectations here for Caleb Williams and Ben Johnson in year number one?
Yeah, I think he probably took a little too much guff for last year. Like, it didn't look great. You know, I watched a lot of Bears games last year and you know, probably saw at least some of every game. And you know, it was a struggle to get to where they did, and they lost a lot of football games. But when you sat back at the end of the year, you realize his interception total was pretty darn low. Yes, he took too many sacks, but, you know, still managed to have one of the statistically best seasons by a Bears quarterback ever, right? And I think that, you know, the expectations coming in were that he was this generational talent. It was going to be a game changer, instantly the best Bears quarterback ever, talent-wise anyway. And when that didn't immediately turn into roses day one, I think he kind of got put in a tough spot. You think about the coaching, the offensive line last year, you know, the really tough situation he was kind of thrust into. I think he did okay for himself, but, you know, Ben Johnson's expectations are higher. You know, he's a demanding guy. You know, everything has to be precise. You saw him, you know, kicking guys out of practice for not being lined up right. And, you know, he's going to demand that Caleb doesn't just make these willy-nilly decisions. If you're going to color outside the lines, you got to have a reason for doing it. You got to know the rules before you can break them, those sorts of things. So I think it's been probably a little bit of a system shock for him. And yeah, we see all the, you know, the camp interceptions and stuff. I was at a training camp practice where Aaron Rodgers threw six picks. I was there.
Wow.
I saw it. You know, and you say to yourself, what is going on? But, you know, afterwards he explained, look, a lot of that was in red zone. I'm trying to figure out where I can fit the ball, what I can get away with. There's always going to be that kind of camp experimentation from quarterbacks as they figure out their receivers, and especially in a new system. So I wouldn't panic yet. Obviously, they have two division games to open the year. Big one Monday night against the Vikings. Then you go to Detroit. That's it. You know, if you start 0-2 and you get that haunting feeling like you did last year, it's gonna feel a lot tougher climb than it might if they go 2-0.
You're right. Yeah, the scheduling gods made it really interesting. Where you said you can't get off to a slow start, that's for sure. And if he's struggling to pick up the Ben Johnson offense, it's two tough defenses, two tough teams to start the season.
Yeah.
That's for sure. As we're talking to Eric Edholm of NFL Media. Lastly, Eric, I want to read you this quote here from Sean Payton, who's speaking to Yahoo Sports recently, and he said this about Bo Nix. He said he's going to be one of the top four or five quarterbacks in the league the next 2 years. Are you buying what Sean Payton's selling?
I think if you'd said that about Drew Brees, you know, even after his first big year, now Drew had been in the league a few years. Obviously, he'd been in San Diego before New Orleans, but I don't know that everyone would have believed you. Now, it's a lot further jump, I would say, with Bo, given that, you know, one season, one fairly impressive season. You know, we saw some really good things for him, more than I think I thought he was capable of. So, you know, I never doubt Sean Payton. Now, he's obviously said some things over the years that have been a little bit hyperbolic and a little bit beyond where I'm willing to go on some things, but The man knows football. The man knows offensive football as well as anybody. And I think he just had a certain feeling for Knicks before the draft. That was always kind of their guy. And we saw them go through a trial of fire, too. I mean, Peyton wasn't afraid to get in his face a little bit and get tough on him. And what did Bo do? He fired right back and went out there and delivered some results. So, boy, if he passed that test as well as he did, I mean, I don't think the ceiling is quite as high as Sean wants to make it, but I've raised the bar more than I imagined I was going to after last year.
We talked to this to start the show, Eric. Would you call the Broncos, at least this year, a Super Bowl contender?
They're close. To be totally frank, I didn't love their draft picks on offense. Like, Jhonae Barrett is going to be an instant contributor, if not the starter, a 12th guy on defense. I mean, he'll be really good for them. So I got that pick, but we'll see on RJ Harvey. We'll see on Pat Bryant, the receiver. Maybe he's Marcus Colston, and I'm just not seeing it. But if those picks come home and they start to get just a little bit more juice offensively, they're really good. The defense did lose a little steam late last year, so it's lived a little off its reputation. But if you can survive the AFC West, you can pretty much survive almost anybody.
That's a good point. That's going to be a really tough and fun
really
division.
Good.
Oh, my goodness, this year for sure. Eric, really do appreciate the time. Make sure you check out Eric's work. Does great work covering the NFL for both for just the league and also the NFL draft as well on NFL Media. So check out NFL.com. Also follow Eric on Twitter at Eric_@home. Eric, thank you so much for the time, man. Really appreciate it.
All right, thanks, Ryan, man. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon as well. The Shedeur Sanders discussion is really interesting. Right? Because if Eric is right, where let's just say Shedeur can't move above Dylan Gabriel and is stuck at either QB4 or QB3, I don't think there's a trade market for him. Again, he was drafted in the fifth round, which means every team had, depending on how many picks you had, 3, 4, maybe 5 chances to draft him. And nobody did. And now, even if with a 7th-round pick, is a team willing to step up, and obviously outside of injury, which is tough to predict right now, but if you don't have an injury, who wants him? Which I think is part of the reason why I think we'll see the Browns keep him on the roster and at worst be the emergency guy, QB3. It's just because if you cut him, number one, you went through this whole circus, song and dance, you signed up for the Shedeur Sanders experience, not even go through with it. Week number one for me would be a waste. But also number two, you're getting no value back. You're going to cut him. And again, you're going to cut him for what? So Joe Flacco can play? So Kenny Pickett can get some burn? Like, at that point, what are you gaining from 2025? You're not going anywhere anyway. You're not a fringe playoff team. You're not one of those, if this goes right and that goes right. You need 100 things to go right just to be in the playoff discussion. 2025 is a lost year. But at least you can gain something by playing and learning what Dylan Gabriel can do or not do. Learning if Shedeur has a chance to be a franchise guy. And then next offseason, having that information to use to say, okay, how aggressive do we need to be in trying to draft a quarterback? You have 2 first-round picks next year. You have the ammunition you need to go and get someone you want. Playing those 2 quarterbacks a good amount this year will help you get closer to the answer of, do we need a quarterback, or could we use both of those picks to bolster our offense and get some playmakers run? Because you look at the Browns' offense, they need help. That offensive line is good, but getting old quick. Receiver, they got no one. Running back, they got no one. They need a lot of help everywhere. Those 2 first-round picks could be very valuable if you feel good about the quarterback. The only way you feel good about the quarterback is playing them. That's it. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4ISN. Really do appreciate Eric at home again giving us a few minutes of his time. When we return, as it is Ryan Hickey in for Bill right here on Rider Than You, buy or sell, Nico Scarlatos has come up with some great questions, including we'll discuss one team in college football, one head coach. Is it playoff or bust when it comes to keeping his job here going forward? We'll answer that when we do return. It's Rider Than You with Ryan Hickey right here on the Infinity Sports Network.
You're listening to the Rider Than You podcast. Welcome back to Rider Than You.
Unnecessary shots at the Golden Goose. By the way, not all geese are worthy of it, but a golden goose is a golden goose. I happen to think Caitlin Clark's talented. What makes a talented goose? I don't know. But treat the golden goose well is probably a good philosophy.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
It is Ryan Hickey in for the golden goose. That is Bill Ryder right here on Ryder Than You. As a reminder, this portion of the show is brought to you by Wesley Financial. Stuck in a timeshare and want out? Contact Wesley Financial Group now and get a free timeshare exit information kit at WesleyFinancialGroup.com. That is WesleyFinancialGroup.com.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Writer Than You.
Okay, Mr. Hickey, are we ready?
Let's go, Nico.
So we've done so much talk this summer about the college football playoff possibly expanding from 12 to 16 teams. There's also been some talk about the men's basketball NCAA tournament expanding beyond what is the current 68-team format. Well, the NCAA voted this week to not expand March Madness past the 68 teams for at least the 2025-26 season. Buy or sell that any more than 68 teams in the NCAA tournament is too many?
Buy.
Buy.
Because you know who's going to get in if they go to 72 or 76, Nico? It's not like the second team that finished in the MAC conference. It's not the loser of the WAC championship. It's going to be 17 and 15 Ohio State. It's going to be 15 and 15 Vanderbilt. It's going to be more mid Big Ten and SEC schools that do not deserve to get in as a money grab. No. I would argue 68 is too much. Go to 64. No plans. But no, anything more than 68 is a big no for me, dog.
Over in the National Basketball Association, the 76ers and Joel Embiid are back in the news as the former MVP is reportedly in bad shape physically, and the Sixers believe he will miss the start of training camp. Buy or sell that you think Philly is already regretting giving Embiid that extension?
Buy.
Buy.
They should have regretted it the second they said, hey, Joel, do you want an extension? This time last year, they gave an extension. Why? All the guy done has been hurt his entire career. He has literally never played a postseason game healthy. And now as he gets older, you expect him to get somehow less injury prone and more available? And now with this extension, Nico, he's under contract. He's a player option for the 2028-2029 season for $67 million. Hot take, he's going to take it. So he is now under contract with the Sixers for the next 4 years. He's not healthy. He's not available. He never will be. It's sad, but that's the story of his career. And I thought it was really interesting. He did like an expose, I guess, if you will, with ESPN that came out about a month or so ago. It was really well done. But in it, he basically said he's done putting his body on the line. He's done playing through injury and rushing back and playing hurt. He said it's not worth it. So now this knee surgery, which he got in April, is not going well. Shocker. And he's already told you on the record he's not going to push it. He's not playing opening night. I'd be surprised if he plays before December. He played 19 games last year. If he plays more than 50, that'd be a big-time win for the Sixers. Yes, they should have regretted it the moment he signed the dotted line, I should say.
Another team that is considering paying a big-name player a big-time contract, Micah Parsons and the Dallas Cowboys still looking to agree on a deal. Parsons since has requested a trade from the Cowboys. Buy or sell that if the four-time Pro Bowler does get traded, the Patriots are the best fit.
I'm going to sell.
Sell.
I'm going to raise you. I think the Chargers would be a great fit. Joey Bosa out. You have Khalil Mack, who's consistent. Now, all of a sudden, you can bring Micah Parsons to that team. As Jim Harbaugh's trying to build the Chargers the same way I think he built Michigan, and you look at Michigan, their run to the national title. Some of the best teams they had, you had Aiden Hutchinson. I don't know why I just blanked on his name. Holy smokes. But, like, Michigan's had some great defensive end that have helped them win the national title and win a lot of games in that 2021, 2022, and 2023 seasons. I think the Chargers, Nico, would be a great, great fit for Micah Parsons.
The Chargers was one of the teams I thought of. How about the Packers? Buy or sell that you think they'd be a good fit for Parsons?
Oh, buy. Oh, yeah.
Buy.
That defense is really good under Jeff Hafley. Now you get a consistent pass rusher as well. Absolutely.
Over in the NFC South, Bryce Young is entering his third year in the National Football League. Lost the starting job last year, was benched, did eventually get it back. In the 10 games following the benching where he came back and started, he had 2,096 yards, 15 touchdowns, and 6 interceptions. So clearly was doing much better once he returned. Buy or sell that you're confident that Bryce Young is going to get even better in 2025?
Buy.
Buy.
Second year under Dave Canales. I think Dave Canales has proven to be a good offensive mind. He worked wonders with Baker Mayfield a few years ago. Look, Bryce, I think he's showing development, like you just highlighted. Since he came back from his benching, he's learned a lot. I think a different perspective helps. Not everyone hits right away. Not everyone is Jaden Daniels who come in like the world on fire. Other guys develop slowly. Look at Baker Mayfield, amongst others. I have not yet thrown Bryce Young's career in the toilet. I think he still very much can be a franchise guy. I'm excited to see what he can do now in Carolina. They got Tet McMillan, which I got a tweet, by the way. People got upset that I called him Tet McMo instead of Ted Aurora McMillan. We're going to go with Tet McMillan. All right, let's just everyone relax. But he's a good receiver. Big body guy that will help this offense for sure. No, I like Bryce Young here. I think to have pick up where he left off from the end of last year.
Now, if you include the fifth-year option, they do have his control until through the 2027 season. But if he doesn't play well this year, buy or sell, you think Carolina would consider drafting a quarterback in the 2026 draft?
I think they would consider it buy.
Buy.
Especially with how hyped that quarterback class is, even if Archer Manning does not come out. If Bryce Young does not play well, that means the Panthers will probably have at least a top 10, if not a top 7 or top 5 pick. I think at that point, you would definitely at least consider, is Bryce Young better than Cade Klubnik? Who I think being in that area, a lot of people will want him on the team. Drew Aller, maybe John Mateer gets some love. Lenore Sellers. There'd be a conversation there for sure.
You really are big on John Mateer, huh?
I'm going to will it into existence. Buy your stock now, Nico. It's low. It's low, so it comes in at a good price. Come November, it'll be sky high.
Sell.
From a quarterback who's just trying to find his place in the NFL to someone.
Hold on. Can you just admit you're anti-John Mateer because you're a Michigan fan and you're trying to will into the universe that he's going to stink against Michigan week 2?
Buy.
I'll admit that. I'll give you
that's
that.
Fair.
Yeah.
He's got to find the biases.
Aaron Rodgers was meeting the media the other day. He mentioned that Arthur Smith's offense is, quote, flexible. He really likes what he has seen so far in training camp. We've asked this question a bunch of times before, but why not once more? Buy or sell that this is the year the Steelers finally win a playoff game?
Sell.
Sell.
I'll go one further. Not only will they not win a playoff game, they will not make the playoffs, and this will be Mike Tomlin's first sub-500 season as head coach of the Steelers. I do not think Aaron Rodgers is going to work out at all. I think you start to see signs last year towards the end of the season that defense really wearing down. They're getting older. I don't think this defense will be as good and be able to win them games as they've done in the past. I'm not in love with this offense at all. I am not high in the Steelers at all. You want to get crazy? I think 5-12 is on the table.
5-12?
I think they're going to be really bad. Really bad. Bottom just comes out.
I don't think they're going to be that great, but I'd be shocked if they only win 5
games.
Like,
if their defense takes a step back, and you have Aaron Rodgers playing behind, I would say, below average to maybe, at best, average offensive line, with no running back you trust, outside of DK Metcalf, no real receiver you feel good about, and Aaron Rodgers at 41, who's not shown you any reason to believe he can be the old Aaron Rodgers, with Arthur Smith, by the way, who's not a very good play caller, where are we going, Nico? Where's this team? How is this team getting to 9 wins? I know they've done it before with Duck Hodges and Mason Rudolph. Eventually, all good things must come to an end. You can only do it so many times. And this is the year where it just truly breaks down in front of their face and blows up in a big way. But you know what, by the way? If you're a Steelers fan, I think you should probably root for that. Because if you want real, and a lot of Steelers fans want Mike Tomlin fired, they want some real change. You're not getting change if this team goes 9-8. If they lose a playoff game, Art Rooney's been very, very cautious. I don't think that would be enough. Like, if you talk about going 5-12, just a shock to the system, that'll be enough to where real changes are made in Pittsburgh. Otherwise, if it's the same we've seen the last few years where you make the playoffs and lose or barely miss out on the postseason, some changes can be made. I'm sure a quarterback, but I don't know. It's the drastic ones you need to truly turn this franchise around.
We spoke to Eric Edholm in the last segment, our guest on the show today, about Travis Hunter making his debut with the Jaguars, conversation about if he'll play both sides or not, the Jags obviously moving up from number 5 overall to the 2 spot to get Hunter, gave up the 5 pick and a 2026 first round selection. The Browns ended up taking Mason Graham with that pick. Buy or sell that Travis Hunter must play both sides of the ball in order for the trade to be worth it?
I'm going to sell, actually.
Sell.
Now, Eric said he thinks he'll play mostly offense. I think if you get a true lockdown corner, I think to me that makes the trade worth it. Because those guys are so hard to find that if you forget what he does in offense, if you're telling me 3 years from now, Travis Hunter is primarily a corner and they've given up on playing both ways, I would still say that's a big win. Even though you give up your first round pick next year, which is a lot to give up. If you can get a lockdown corner, which are very difficult to find, I think you could say that trade is worth it.
Saquon Barkley and the Philadelphia Eagles looking to go back-to-back, but they're trying to overcome a Super Bowl hangover. The Eagles running back has been using trash talk at practice to try to motivate his guys. Buy or sell that you have no issue with Saquon's approach here at training camp?
Buy.
Buy.
Whatever it takes, keep that chip on the shoulder. Guys are motivated, stay engaged. I think it's easy to be complacent. If it takes jawing a little bit and maybe saying some stuff you normally wouldn't say to get a guy fired up, whatever. Listen, I'm here for whatever it takes. Whatever it takes, Nico.
The only reason I was worried about it is because we've seen so many cases of guys getting into fights at training camp and practice, and you never want that to be a thing, especially when it's coming from one of your leaders in Saquon.
I guess I'm not as out, or I don't get as worried about training camp fights as maybe other people do. I'm not sitting here encouraging it, but I do think there is a point of like competitive juices boiling over where if you're that intense, I think it could be a good thing. I'm not saying teams have to fight in order to win. If you told me that all of a sudden Saquon's jawing leads to a fight in training camp, I don't think for the Eagles, with where they are going into this season, I don't think it'd be the worst thing in the world.
Last one for you. We got news that DJ Lagway, Florida's starting quarterback, has returned to practice after dealing with a calf injury. A lot of pressure on Billy Napier and the Gators this year. They were ranked 17th in the preseason coaches poll that came out yesterday. Buy or sell that if Florida misses the playoffs, Billy Napier should be fired?
I'm going to sell this.
Sell.
And because you look at what they did last year and him being able to return going 8-5, surprising a lot of people. Look at the schedule. Now they play big barn burner here, Nico. Long Island University to start. Don't sleep on the Sharks of Long Island. Long Island's known for their football prowess, as Andrew Bogus looks at me. All three Long Island guys right here, we know you never want to play Long Island University at your home opener at night at home. That's a recipe for upset right there. But let's just assume they squeak by LIU. South Florida comes to town week number 2. So, okay, should be 2-0. At LSU week 3, that's probably a loss. At Miami, tough game toss-up. You play Texas at home, that's probably a loss. A&M's a very, very tough game on the road at Kyle Field. 12th man will be very loud. You know, obviously you have the world's largest outdoor cocktail party against Georgia. You're at Ole Miss, who I think, you know, we'll take a step back, but at least we'll be competitive. That's a tough game on the road. Tennessee comes to town. I'm not high in Florida State at all. We're talking about 7 games that I think are at best for Florida toss-up. If Billy Napier with DJ Lagway goes 8-4, I think he's back in 2026. I think when you look at his schedule, 8-4 is fair. I don't think he would get run out of town. I don't think that should be called a disappointment. Now, with DJ Lagway then going into 2026, being a junior and a 3-year starter, by that point, I think it's playoff or bust. But for this year, still, I think just trying to build with this tough schedule, 8-4, I think would be good enough for Florida's head coach and Billy Napier to come back next season. A-plus job, 2 days in a row from Nico Scarlato's doing a great job with buy or sell. It is Ryan Hickey in for Bill right here on Rider Than You. When we return, let's dive more into Travis Hunter a little bit. As it comes out, he's the starting receiver for the Jaguars, second string corner. I wanted to just at least discuss to you why I would have that opposite and play my corner first. We'll get to more, I'll get into more of that.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
It is Ryan Hickey in for Bill right here on Writer Than You. Thank you for making us a part of your Tuesday. If you missed any part of the show so far, make sure you do check out the Writer Than You podcast, available wherever you do get your podcasts. this is my last day this week, at least in terms of filling in for Bill. Andrew Bogus will have the chair the next 2 days on Wednesday, Thursday, and Jody Mack will round out the week on Friday. I'll be back, at least producing, now sitting in the chair Nico is currently sitting in the next 2 days. So Bogus and I will be with you on Wednesday and Thursday. Very excited for those two shows. We already have Steve Phillips, former MLB GM, set to come on with Bogus tomorrow, which will be a lot of fun, kind of talking about some of the biggest storylines in baseball, including, I'm sure, the free-for-alls of both the Mets and Yankees as they are just right now toiling or heading towards, I should say, maybe the better way to say it, anonymity here as they are playing themselves out of some real playoff baseball. As a reminder, this Defensive Player of the Week is brought to you by the Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. This week, we highlight Phillies pitcher Christopher Sanchez. The Southpaw threw 8 shutout innings on Sunday Night Baseball in a 2-0 win over the Detroit Tigers. That win moved Philly back into first place in the NL East. It's been them and the Mets teeter-tottering of who's in first place. Sanchez was amazing, amazing on Sunday night. So you get that not only big win for the Phillies, but also the series win there as well as they did beat Detroit in front of the nation. This is a wild headline that somehow is true. So a zoo in Denmark has asked the public for donations. Okay, right? Not crazy. Pretty normal. What they're asking for, though, in terms of donations, is not monetary donations. They instead are asking citizens to donate their unwanted small pets or even horses in order to feed its captive predators. Now, the zoo posted this explanation on social media. They said, in zoos, we have a responsibility to imitate the natural food chain of the animals in terms of both animal welfare and professional integrity. And so they basically want to mimic the wild for the lions they have, the tigers they have. I don't know what other animals they do have in captivity that they're looking to feed. But they basically said, if you don't want your gerbil, if you're sick of your cat, give it to us so we can throw them in the tiger cage and allow the tiger to hunt. That's insane. That's insane because that has to, like, you have to have some bedside manner there. And that has to be a situation where, look, as bad as it is, it has to be similar to sausage. Nobody wants to know how sausage is made because no one would ever eat sausage. You see it, it tastes good on a breakfast sandwich. It tastes good, you know, on a bun if you want it for a dinner. Don't tell me, though, what's in it. Just like a hot dog. Don't tell me what's in it. I'm going to eat it. I'm going to eat it guilt-free. Same thing here for the zoo. Like, if you find a rabbit on the side of the road and you trap it and you want to feed it to the tigers, don't tell me you're doing it. I know they're getting fed. They're eating meat somehow, right? Some animal is dying for them to eat. I know that. I don't have to, though, see my poor cat Sprinkles thrown into the lion's den in order so the lion can get something to eat. I am shocked that got approved. You could easily just go out and go down the street and pick up a cat or pick up a stray dog. Don't ask, don't tell. If that's what you truly want to do, then you know what? Do it. Go out there in secret, capture some animals you're looking for, and then in the dark of night, when no patrons are in attendance and the zoo closes down and it's dusk, which is when a lot of these animals come out to feed anyway, then let them do that. Then release them into the tiger cage and let them go buck wild. Asking for donations is wild. Because then, like, that feels like a lose-lose. Number one, now you know, because it's out there, you know in the back of your mind, oh, when this tiger goes to eat, it's going to be eating some poor cat that was just maybe on my street a week ago. But also, how do you, like, guilt, you cannot be someone who owns a pet and then turn it into the zoo guilt-free and basically be like, okay, you know, here you go. Like, if you don't want a dog or you don't want a cat, you could still donate it to a shelter, find maybe someone else who wants, like, you can at least give it away and at least feel good about yourself. I'm not just leading this poor cat or dog or horse to slaughter. That's crazy. That is crazy. Wow. Denmark, man. They do things different. Holy cow. It is Ryan Hickey right here in for Bill on Rider Than You. So I thought this was really interesting. So yesterday the Jaguars announced their depth chart for the first preseason game, and it had Travis Hunter listed as a starting wide receiver and a second string defensive back. If it's me and I'm Jacksonville, I'm flipping that. I would much rather play Travis Hunter more at defensive back than I would at receiver. And it was interesting, their head coach Liam Cohen was on with Rich Eisen yesterday, and he said that he expects Travis Hunter to play 80% roughly of the offensive snaps. So he's going to be on the field a ton, which would mean, right? Look, I know what Travis Hunter says, and he says he wants to play every snap because he did it in college and he thinks he can do it at the NFL level. He's not playing every snap offensively and every snap defensively at the NFL level. It's just not possible. It's too physical. It's too tiring. He's going to get worn down way too quick. The NFL speed and physicality is way different than college's speed and physicality. You're going to have to make a choice. And it seems like, at least right now, Liam Cohen is choosing to play him more on the offensive side than the defensive side. I just don't think it's worth it for two reasons. Number one, you have Brian Thomas Jr. So you already have a really good receiver for Trevor Lawrence to rely on. Your defensive back depth chart, for me, is not as strong. I think you need more help defensively. Not to mention, it's a lot more difficult to find good defensive backs than it is to find good receivers. You look at least the offensive depth chart. You have Dyami Brown. You have Parker Washington and some receivers that could play offense if Travis Hunter cannot. Defensively right now, your starting defensive backs are Tyson Campbell and Jarian Jones. No disrespect to Jarian Jones. There's a bigger drop-off at defensive back, you know, the second defensive back, than there is a bigger drop-off at the second wide receiver spot. So I'd much rather have Travis Hunter playing DB than receiver, just because I think the talent is less for the Jaguars at DB than his receiver. The other thing is, it's really difficult to find and develop a lockdown defensive back that's not a first-round pick. You look at the best defensive backs right now in the NFL. Patrick Surtain, Derek Stingley, Sauce Gardner, Marlon Humphrey, Trent McDuffie, Christian Gonzalez. All guys that were taken in the first round. All guys, with the exception of Trent McDuffie, who's taken 21st. All guys taken with top 20 picks. Defensive back is a position where you need to draft them at a premium, you know, with a premium pick into the top 20 to have any sort of hope of them panning out. You drafted Travis Hunter too. It's easier to find a receiver in the fifth round that can plug and play and be productive than it is to find a defensive back in the fifth round to play and be productive. Play him at DB. It's the more valuable position. It's the harder commodity to find. When you trade from 5 to 2 and you give up next year's first round pick, I think you're getting much more value by playing Travis Hunter 80% of the time at DB and let's call it 40% of the time at receiver than vice versa. We had Eric Edholm, does a great job covering the NFL. He said he expects Travis Hunter, you know, maybe 2-minute situation, maybe end of the game situation to play defensive back, but mostly play receiver. I think that's personally a waste. For how good Travis Hunter is at receiver, to give up a first round pick next year to trade up to draft him to primarily pay receiver when you already have a good guy in Brian Thomas Jr., that's a waste of resources. A waste of a first round pick next year, if you ask me. Play him at DB first, receiver second. That music unfortunately means our time here is done. A big thank you to Nico Scarlatos. Did an excellent job producing these last 2 days. A big thank you to you. Thank you for making us a part of your morning. Again, if you missed any part of the show, do check out the Rider Than You podcast available wherever you get your podcasts. Andrew Bogus will be back with you tomorrow. This has been Ryan Hickey, in for Bill Rider right here on Rider Than You.